welcome back to another episode of Tabletop Crowd. Tonight, I am joined by Nikki Valens, and we're going to be discussing their amazing upcoming Kickstarter for game Artisans of Splendid Vale, which is a cooperative adventure game set in a magical land of beauty, adventure, and magic. Thank you so much for joining me, Nikki. Would you mind telling the folks a little bit about yourself and then jump into telling us about your game?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. So I'm Nikki Valens. I've been a designer and advocate for a few years here, just trying to make a bunch of cool, different, fun games. A lot of people know me for like Eldritch Horror or Mansions of Madness, but I've also been trying to do some more story-driven stuff. So like Legacy of Dragonhold, which some people really like, and this one here, Artisans of Splendid Vale. It's a nice cooperative kind of adventure feeling to it. It's very story driven. You play as these four different characters, and there's a lot of, you know, those characters' backstories to uncover as you play through this campaign. And it's just like this, like you said, this magical, beautiful world that you get to explore and run around in and find all kinds of cool stuff in ruins and around town and wherever else you wish to look.
That sounds very cool. It sounds kind of, it sounds light almost, right? Like not a heavy or dark theme, which I think is fun, especially during this time. And you said there's four playable characters. Is that correct?
Yeah. Like you said, it's a very, a light, colorful, just kind of a fun, bright, and cheery setting. The stories that we're telling are very, very positive in nature. It's more about sort of like being true to yourself, power of friendship, you know, reclaiming the history and knowledge and technology of your culture's past and stuff like that. So it's not the same kind of, you know, it's not a grim dark thing. It's not your kind of classical fantasy with, you know, orcs and goblins and stuff. It's a much more friendly and just kind of colorful and beautiful setting. And these four characters that you get to play as, they really kind of embody that culture of this setting as well. They're all these very like forward-thinking. They're trying to kind of do their best, make the most of what they can, what they have. They're all artisans, which is where the name comes from. Mm-hmm. So in this setting, artisans are people who craft magical things. So for instance, we have like an apothecary who's brewing potions. We have a tailor who is making magical garments, etc. So it's all about kind of going out into this world that they live in and gathering the components that they need to do their crafting, learning about the magic and techniques that those who came before them have used so that they can kind of further their own crafts. And then making stuff for themselves and each other and the rest of their society to kind of just advance as a culture.
I love that. I was taking notes because I liked so many things that you said, especially mm-hmm. the it being about like the power of friendship. I love when a game can capture that type of feeling. I'm big on games that involve a lot of like relationship building, world building, and not just on the tension side, right? But being able to work together and have that like warm, fuzzy feeling with the folks that you're playing with. So the characters, I know you mentioned that there's someone that can make potions and someone that can kind of craft like a tailor. Are those playable characters or are those NPCs in the game?
Yeah, those are two of the playable characters in the game. The other two are also artisans. So the other two are an artificer and a mason. And I'm using a number of words like tailor or apothecary or mason that are real world terms, but mm-hmm. in our setting here, they specifically refer to people who are using some of those techniques that we're familiar with, but to create magical things. So for instance, the mason on the team knows how to use the magical substance that you're always seeking, and they can use those to create runes that empower different items or strengthen them, make them more durable, or in some cases, almost give them life, like creating animated constructs that can protect areas or something like that.
Very cool. So are you using these, so would the mason use these runes to power these different items? And then I know you mentioned orcs and goblins. Is there fighting in this game? So would you be fighting orcs and goblins, or is there no combat?
So there is some combat, but it's a little different from what you'd expect from a fantasy game. So there is tactical, what I'm calling action scenes. They're not always necessarily combat. The point of them isn't always necessarily to beat a opponent.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're, chasing someone down that's trying to get away. Sometimes you're running away from something that is too powerful for you to be able to deal with, and your only recourse is to escape. So you have a lot of different options available to you, and all of the different ways that these characters can craft can help you to accomplish those goals. So your potion maker can, create different potions that maybe make you faster or more durable or help you heal. The mason who's using these runes is able to sort of enhance the armor or weapons that you have so that you can do what you're doing better. Likewise with the tailor, being able to create, boots that help you jump real high or what have you. But that action scene that I mentioned, it's very cooperative in nature. So in order to perform any actions during it, you actually have to spend these dice from a shared community pool of dice. So these are custom dice. They have, different icons on each side. Like one side's a boot. There's like a shield for defending. There's a comic book pow symbol as sort of the active one that gets used for attacking if you ever need to do that. But as you're kind of playing through these scenes, you're adding dice to this pool. And then whenever you want to do something, you need to take dice out of the pool. But that might mean that you're, taking these kind of abstract resources that the other players may also need. So there's a lot of paying attention to the needs of the other players and working with what you have as this limited resource. So at all times, you're aware of what the other players are capable of and what their needs are so that you can all kind of work together to solve your problems.
I know there's a dice pool. Can you talk a little bit about how you put dice into your community dice pool?
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty simple, actually. At the start of the scene, you start with, there's 12 dice in the game in total. At the start of the scene, you roll 8 in to begin with, just as kind of your base level of, we're feeling energized, we are ready for action here. And then at the start of each of your turns, you'll add 3 dice into the pool. So at the start of your turn, you'll add 3 dice to the pool. Mm. You'll get to take some actions that spend those dice. And then it's my turn, and I'll add 3 dice to the pool, and we'll continue on. You can also use things like potions, or sometimes you have special skills that'll let you add or manipulate the dice that are in that pool. Whenever you're adding dice to the pool, by the way, you're rolling the dice, and then they're sort of locked to that symbol unless something can allow you to change it. Okay. Yeah. So you're usually spending, on average 2 or 3 dice out of the pool at a time, but you also need to use those for reactions like defending yourself. So the more active you are in any given scene, that pool starts to deplete. You might not have the options available to you to do the things that you want. Like maybe you need to defend against an attack, but the enemies have been attacking you pretty hard, and you've depleted all the shields that are left in the pool. So at this point, like, you need to start thinking of other tactics. Like, can we use, instead of the boots, to just kind of move away from these enemies, since we're kind of like not able to defend ourselves well, we're getting too tired. Do we have a lot of POWs in the pool that might represent like, oh, we're getting pretty reckless here. We're like going all in on just trying to defeat them before they defeat us, even if it means, you know, we're taking a lot of damage in the process or something like that.
Yeah. So it sounds like it is pretty straightforward for how to use the community pool, which is nice, right? Because if you get folks that are new to gaming, it doesn't sound like it's going to be overly complicated for anyone to learn. And it sounds like the way that you've designed it, of course, helps you work together, right? Like you said, you have to pay attention to what resources everyone has or what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
I really like that. Something else that caught my ear was that you can also use skills or potions. I think you said your resources.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any like favorite skills or potions that you can share? I know it's not on Kickstarter just yet. And so if there's something you can't share, just tell me. But I'm curious if you have a favorite skill or potion or one that you can share.
So I don't want to give away too much. Okay. We'll definitely be seeing more and more as the Kickstarter is going on.
Fair.
Since we're recording this ahead of time here, we don't know exactly. I don't know which things have been revealed already, but
good point.
Something that people will be definitely interested in. One of the characters, Herenia, who is our resident apothecary, mm-hmm. Also has with them a doggo friend. So one of their skills that they're able to bring into action scenes is essentially having along Rosha, their border collie, as a companion. So that's kind of one of the signature items or skills that you'll see in this.
I love that so much. I know it's an audio medium, so folks can't see my face, but I was very excited when Nikki shared that they have created a character that has a doggo friend.
Yeah, each of the characters has some amount of signature items or skills that kind of helps tell the story that they have. So for instance, our Mason Soraya, she wields her mother's hammer, which is a Mason's hammer. It's designed to be able to carve these runes and create or destroy masonry easily. And this is a hammer that's sort of a family heirloom that's been passed down from her mother, from her grandmother, who are all Masons that have served their community.
Very cool. I always like to think of the backstory of my characters, like where someone came from or why they're doing what they're doing. So I really like that piece. I kind of want to back up just for a second. And if you don't mind sharing what inspired you or what sparked the idea for you to create this game?
So there's kind of two almost completely separate ideas that are very strong in this game. And getting them to work together was a part of the big design challenge with this game. One of those is, of course, this whole combat action scene thing that we've been talking about with the dice pool and having a system that can cleanly and efficiently handle, you know, a very cooperative experience. But then there's the other side of it, which is an actually quite deep narrative and storytelling. So anyone who is a fan of Legacy of Dragonholt, they'll recognize a lot of these same tools that I've used from that, where it's, you know, you're reading through these storybooks, and you get to make choices as players about how the story goes on, you know, what choices your characters are making in the story and everything else. It's a little bit different in this compared to that or some of the other narrative-driven games that are out there. In this case, each of these four characters actually has their very own storybook. So when you open up this box, you will find in it there's a slipcase with essentially four novels in it, one for each of the characters. And as you're playing through the campaign and reading this story, you'll all be reading in your own book together through it. So there's going to be passages that are kind of the main storyline that's always there, regardless of which characters are playing, that'll be show up in all of the books. So you can read that together. And then as it continues, you know, different characters will have interjections. When it comes time to make a choice, different characters will have options that are only available to them. So you can, as a group, play through all of these different adventures that you can go on, and the characters really become a part of that story. They're fully embedded into that story. Even when you're not out on adventures, another way that we really tie in the character backstories and the cooperative nature of this is between adventures, kind of in your off time back in the city, there's something called interludes that are these short vignette type stories that, you know, only take a minute or two to kind of play out, but they're very rich in character development, and they're the way that you can, even outside of the action scenes, kind of interact as characters. Like, you might have, oh, I was going to go to the market to pick up some new ingredients. Maybe I should invite so-and-so. And then if they want to come with you, they can go along, and you'll have this nice little back and forth conversation with them as you're, you know, getting your new stuff from the market, or whatever it is. Maybe you, you know, have a party together, or maybe someone's having a hard time and you band together as friends and help them out.
Does the thought of leading a group through the creative landscapes of your imagination terrify you? Do you worry about being asked questions you don't know the answers to? Have you wanted to try being a dungeon or game master, but your social anxiety has been holding you back? Hi, I'm Amber, and I used to nearly vomit at the idea of running a tabletop RPG. How'd I get over that anxiety? I haven't. Surprise! I'm still an anxious mess, and you can listen to all of it on Shapeshift, where I've recorded 80% of every game I've ever ran. Over the last 4 years, I've run a ton of indie one-shots like Casketland, a weird Western horror game, to my first ever campaign using Ryutama, a Studio Ghibli-like exploration-focused game. Follow me through my journey learning how to GM and to live with my anxiety. It doesn't go away completely, but it does get easier to manage. Go to geekspective.com to find out more information, or find Shapeshift on wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I didn't know where to start first, if I want to ask about the storybooks or if I want to ask about the interludes, because both sound exciting and I want to hear more. The interludes, is it strictly narrative, or is there any sort of mechanical benefit or any mechanical connection between the interludes, or is it, like I said, narrative?
It's essentially a narrative first, but it plays into all of the mechanics of the rest of the game. So for instance, if the interlude that you have is like, we've been kind of getting beat up lately on our adventures, maybe we should kind of train up a little bit. Do you want to go spar with me? You know, we can go spar, and that might give us some experience so that we can gain new skills. Or maybe, you know, a Javi, who is our artificer, maybe in the last adventure that we were on, we found some records of a new method of artifice that was like forgotten about. So Javi might be able to go and like research this and try these new methods in a forge, and that might unlock, you know, a recipe for a new item, or a new way to craft something that can make something better, for instance.
I really like that. And I know that some people want everything to be tied to a mechanic. I don't know that I have a preference. I really like the narrative piece. I like that you've done both, but I do like that it's narrative first. It reminds me a little bit of downtime activities in Blades in the Dark, which I'm aware this is nothing like Blades in the Dark because that is a very dark game. But I really like that there's that piece in between the action scenes, as you mentioned, where you can build that narrative and build those connections and relationships with the other players and characters. I also wanted to ask about the storybook again, with what anything you can share. Did you write the storybooks, or did you bring someone else in to work with you to write the storybooks?
Yeah, so we actually have a decent sized team for putting these together. The kind of base outline of who these characters are and what kind of a story I was telling is something that I put together. But then I brought on a number of cultural consultants and a number of writers to kind of help me put it all together. So there's a nice big team of people that have put a lot of work into this to make it what it is.
Sure.
And I think the characters really shine because of that. There was a lot of good voices, a lot of collaboration in terms of creating these characters. We want them to feel like living, breathing humans that kind of have their own strengths and weaknesses, the own things that they're worried about. And as the game plays out and you're playing as these characters, I hope that, players will sort of start to embody those characters. They'll understand kind of what those characters' reactions might be. They'll kind of get into character and role play it a little bit. And it's definitely, in playtests that I've had so far, we've definitely nailed a good spot with that in terms of character art and their name and a very short character bio that you can go off of before you kind of pick which characters you're playing. We have a very high hit rate for players being like, I'm really into this character. I want to play this character. And then as they're getting into the story and, you know, a couple adventures deep, they're like, this character is so much what I wanted. And I didn't even know that at the beginning. So we've definitely had a number of players tell us that, you know, they just really love these characters, and they, you know, love seeing them interact with each other. And it doesn't even matter what they're doing, whether it's an action scene or going to the market or just hanging out together at a coffee shop or whatever else.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you and the team that you brought on, you took a lot of time and put a lot of heart into the game. And I think that definitely translates when it's a passion project for someone. And I think players can feel that. And it sounds like that's the feedback you're getting, that these are rich characters and they enjoy playing them. So there's four playable characters. Is it a four-player only game?
So we're marketing it as 2 to 4 players.
Okay.
The reason being, there is this such a focus on cooperation, and the mechanics do back that up. There's many situations in adventures where the game assumes you will have 2 characters, at least, in terms of, you know, who will have a way to get past a certain problem that you're encountering, or how can any 2 given characters work together to solve something. I definitely won't try to stop anyone who wants to play it solo with 2 or more of the characters. I will say you might have your hands full a little bit, because we are talking about these 4 character books. Each of these are, you know, more than 300 pages. So trying to carry more than 2 of them for sure, is going to be a little bit difficult, because mm-hmm. you'll have to kind of, you know, see the different books at the same time to know which characters are talking when and whatnot. But I'm sure there's some dedicated solo gamers out there that will make it happen and find some workarounds that'll make it much easier for themselves. But for the experience that I wanted to provide, mm-hmm. it's definitely multiple people at a table sharing this story together, as you're playing it through the story, and you know, you're voicing, giving voice to your character. It starts to feel a little bit like almost reading like a stage script, like a screenplay almost, where, you know, different people are interjecting, and you have someone who's the narrator kind of like talking about the story, and you have dialogue and whatnot.
So how long would you say the gameplay is?
You can break it up pretty much any way that you want. The action scenes themselves are definitely the chunkiest piece of it. Some of the action scenes might only take like 45 minutes. They might be nice and short. Some of them can go a bit long. Some of them are specifically intended to be sort of like a marathon or a battle of attrition type effects. So those can take a bit longer. We intend to have, you know, some information at the start of each action scene about how long we expect it should take. But other than that, you can kind of chop it up as small of pieces as you want, because the rest of it's just narrative where you're following along a thread of different entries. So at pretty much any point, you can just go, okay, quick, write down entry 206. We'll pick up there again next time we're playing.
I like that, because you can play different lengths of sessions, and it sounds like with there being four characters, when you do decide you're done or when you do finish the game, you can mix up your players and change your character, and that gives good replayability.
So it's a campaign game. So you're going to play through this whole big story. I don't know how accurate this is. This is like my best estimate right now. We're looking at close to like 50 hours or more for playing through the whole campaign. So it's awesome. Pretty long.
Yeah.
You're playing through it. You're going to see the story. Of course, there's different options that you can do. You might not see all of the different adventures that are available to you in the campaign. So playing through it again, playing with different characters is really fun. Making different choices as any given character is fun. And maybe seeing some adventures you didn't see before. Something else that is important is there are legacy elements here. So there's going to be stickers and, you know, written modifications that you'll be putting on character sheets and maps and other things. So as you're playing the game, you know, the game is evolving. When you unlock a new skill for your character, that's actually a sticker that is going onto your character sheet to improve, you know, what your character is capable of doing. Likewise, if you're upgrading items, you're going to, you know, do so with stickers that you're putting onto those item cards. And then there will be a recharge pack available, so that if you want to replay, you can replace just those few components that will get modified so that you can easily replay.
So I'm not sure how much, if anything, you can share about the components. I heard custom dice, and I'm hearing stickers and storybooks. Is there anything mm-hmm. else that's going to be included that you can share, or do we have to wait for the Kickstarter?
Something that we have seen a little bit on Twitter already, and we'll definitely see more of as we're leading up to this. There is a number of very cute and colorful meeples involved here. So we won't be using any like plastic minis for the characters or the enemies or anything like that. Instead, we have a wide variety of, you know, very detailed screen printed meeples that help to characterize both your playable characters and any of the creatures that you'll interact with over the course of the campaign. I've heard many people say that those are very cute.
Yeah, I love that. I love that them being cute matches how, I don't want to call this game just cute, because I know it's so much more than that, but I definitely get that cute and like cozy feeling when I look at the artwork. So I'm a big fan of the meeples already. Can you tell us a little bit more about the setting of your game?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's called Artisans of Splendid Vale, and that is essentially the two pieces of this setting. You are the artisans, you're playing as them, and you are exploring the Splendent Vale, which is this very verdant valley where plants grow, you know, very fast, very wild. The animals have almost magical qualities to them that we don't see in the normal world. For instance, Hrina's dog that we talked about earlier has some cute little horns. You will find that there are some cats in this game that have wings, nice feathery wings. And all of these different things, the plants growing quickly, the animals having these kind of magical adaptations, is because of a substance called materia. And materia is actually, it comes from meteors. So as the story in game goes, many hundreds of years ago, a giant red meteor fell, and it carved this valley, and it created a massive crater at the edge of this landmass. And that crater filled with water, and it became the harbor that the city was built around. So the people who came kind of entranced and curious about what has happened, they have, you know, seen these meteor showers in the night sky, and they, you know, settle there, and they start working together, and they found this city that they all now live in, which is called Splendence, named after the valley. And they kind of shared their crafts with each other and kind of taught each other all the different things that they know. And that's kind of what it is. So you, as these artisans, are sort of the product of a few hundred years later, the advancement of all of these different cultures coming together and working together and creating something new and beautiful. It's a sort of contemporary fantasy. So it's not like a medieval type of a setting. We have things like coffee shops, there's radios. They have in their city, they do have, you know, some like public transit type stuff. It's a much more modern take on a fantasy setting, but where all of the magic and all of the fantastical elements, they directly stem from this materia that comes from these meteors. So all of their magical crafting somehow uses this materia. As the materia sort of infuses into the soil, that's what causes the plants to grow, and, you know, helps them kind of, you know, grow better crops and everything else.
Are there grocery stores?
You know, there'd have to be.
Okay.
They do live in a city. I talk about markets a lot. They definitely, we go to a lot of markets.
That's way both better than a grocery store.
For food and other things. You know, there's farmers markets and other things. It's definitely more modern in a lot of ways, but also kind of folksy in a lot of other ways. There's a recurring coffee shop that's like your favorite place to kind of hang out together. But at the same time, I've never really talked about like a grocery store per se. There's just kind of like open markets instead.
I also really like the cats with the feathery wings, which I know is a big surprise after my reaction to the dog. Are there any other magical animals that you can interact with? And you don't have to be specific on what they are if you don't want to. I'm just curious.
Yeah, you'll interact with a number of different, you know, plants and animals over the course of the story that have clearly been affected by materia in different ways. There's also just a lot of things that you would expect to just exist that aren't necessarily as fantastical because it's, I mean, a lot of settings use this term, but it's essentially kind of a low magic setting in that there's not, you know, there's not people wielding fireballs and flight spells and stuff like that. It's much more kind of down to earth, like the things you'd expect to do just as people out and about having adventures, mm-hmm. But with a hint of the fantastical sort of boosting what our technology already is. Where we've developed electricity and other technologies, they've used magic to essentially solve those same problems.
I really like that you use the magic and the magical setting. A lot of it seems to apply to this crafting and, like you said, doing things that you would normally do. So I know that there's a lot of high fantasy, high magic games. I love those games, but I really like that you've kept this game really grounded, even though it has a lot of fantasy and a lot of, like, Cats with Wings is fantastical, but it just feels really grounded. And I the setting sounds amazing. I'm very excited to back this game.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Nikki, to tell us about the Artisans of Splendid Vale. Before we go, do you want to tell folks where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place is on Twitter. You can find me at Valens116. It's just my last name, Valens, and then 116. I usually tweet about all the different things that I'm working on, and I'll retweet anything about Artisans that gets broadcast as well. And occasionally on Twitch, I will also be streaming Saturday mornings typically. So you can catch me on Twitch. My channel name is Valenced Breakfast. It's like balanced breakfast, but with a V for my name.
Amber here. I would like to thank you so much for listening to Tabletop Babble, Tabletop Crowd, and Tabletop Spotlight, all the tabletop things that we have going on here lately. For show news, announcements, updates, and all that jazz, you can follow us on Twitter at Tabletop Babble. Also, it would be really, really helpful if you left us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help the show out a lot. Anyway, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.